Hare Krishna. So today we start with the third section of the Ishopanishad. We completed from the introduction to mantra 8. So the invocation to 3, we're talking about live in harmony with Ishvara. Then mantras 4 to 8 talked about the Ishvara can be understood by spiritual vision. Now how do we develop that spiritual vision? That is through cultivating vidya and doing the right upasana. So 9, 10, 11 will talk about vidya, and 12, 13, 14 will talk about upasana. Now these words 9, 10, 11, if we look at them literally, their meaning seems to be quite confusing. The 9th, we will look at them in detail, but here a quick overview. The 9th verse basically says that Andham tama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhuya ibate tamo yo vidyayam rataha. That those who are in ignorance, they will go into darkness. And those who are in knowledge, they will go into greater darkness. And then, after that, it says that those who are in knowledge and those who are in darkness, actually speaking, there are two different results of this. And the wise understand this. That then after that, that one result is obtained by cultivation of vidya, another by the cultivation of avidya. And then the third verse says that actually when one cultivates vidya and avidya both together, then one will go beyond the cycle of birth and death and attain liberation. So now, first it is saying that both vidya and avidya are bad. In fact, vidya is worse than avidya. Then it seems to say that vidya and avidya will give two opposite results. And then it says that vidya and avidya both have to be cultivated together to become attain liberation. So what is going on over here? So actually here in these three mantras, as well as similarly in the next three mantras, 12 to 14, the same words vidya and avidya are used. But their meanings are different in each of these mantras. So we'll look at the meanings of these mantras through a table, and we'll see how the same word can have different meanings depending on different contexts. So in the ninth mantra, what does avidya mean? Andham tamah pravishanti ye avidyam upasate. So there avidya means the ignorance and the ignorant pursuit of sense gratification. That is avidya. So those who live for sense gratification, they are going to enter into darkness. And then, tato bhuya ivate tamo yo vidyayam rataha. So here, vidyayam rataha. This is not knowledge, real knowledge in terms of vidya, but it is so-called knowledge. It is the knowledge that promotes sense gratification. So those people who with knowledge engage in sense gratification, they usually commit far greater sinful activities. And that's how they go deeper into darkness. So here avidya is ignorant pursuit of sense gratification, and vidya is pursuit of sense gratification with knowledge. So then 10th mantra says, Anya devahu vidyaya, anya dahura vidyaya, iti shushrumadhiranam. So it is saying one result is obtained by the pursuit of avidya and another result is obtained by the pursuit of vidya. So what is it here? Avidya and vidya don't mean the same thing. All the terms are same. Here it basically is referring to material life and spiritual life. So the anya devahura vidyaya. So what was called avidya and vidya in the first mantra? Both of them are clubbed together as avidya over here. So here especially it refers to the vidya, but essentially pursuit of sense gratification is avidya. Whether one is doing it with in ignorance or with knowledge. So what this mantra means is that by pursuing sense gratification, one result is obtained that is classified as worshipping avidya. And another result is obtained by pursuing spiritual life, ultimately Krishna consciousness. So here, vidya refers to the pursuit of spiritual knowledge and pursuit of spiritual goals. Avidya refers to material knowledge and the pursuit of material pleasures. And then in the last mantra, it says that vidyam cha yastad vedo bhayam saha avidyaya mrityum tirtva vidyaya amritamashnute. So it says that with vidya and avidya, one can attain fearlessness and go beyond the cycle of birth and death. Avidyaya mrityum tirtva, by avidya one will go beyond mrityu, and vidyaya amritamashnute, by vidya one will attain amritatva, amrit, eternality. So what does this here refer to? Here, the same words again with avidya and vidya are used. But here, avidya refers to the knowledge for bodily maintenance. That means here, avidya refers to the basic knowledge by which how we have to keep ourselves healthy, how we have to earn a livelihood, how we have to maintain basic family stability and social harmony at a basic level. We cannot become happy in this world, but we have to live harmoniously in this world without too much disruptions. The knowledge for bodily maintenance here is called as avidya. So that avidya is required if one is to practice spiritual life. And then, so avidyaya amrityum tirtva, one will be able to navigate through this ocean of material existence if one has some knowledge of the ocean. You know, how the waves can become too much, how the waves will become less. But ultimately one has to go to the destination of eternity. That is the only way out of the ocean. So that destination eternity will be attained by the practice of spiritual life. So that's why here vidya refers to the knowledge of pursuit of Krishna consciousness. So to repeat here, so what is called as avidya and vidya in nine words, so that means basically common denominator is pursuing sense gratification in both of them, in ninth mantra. And tenth mantra, both avidya and vidya from the ninth mantra are called as avidya, because in both cases there is pursuit of sense gratification. And in the 10th and 11th mantras, the meaning of vidya remains the same. It is knowledge for the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. But the meaning of avidya changes from 10 to 11 again. 10 to 11 it is, the change is that in 11 it is not knowledge for pursuing sense gratification, it is knowledge for bodily maintenance. So we will look at this table once again. If it is a little confusing right now, when we go over the mantras, things will become more clear. But the main point I want to make over here is that we cannot understand scripture just by knowing words. There is text and there is context. And unless we have a whole picture of the context, just the text is not enough to comprehend things. By the text, we may use a dictionary, and by the dictionary, we may get some basic understanding, but we cannot get complete understanding just by dictionary alone. To get a complete understanding, we need to have a broader understanding of the context. So what vidya means, what avidya means, one has to carefully study and then understand. So the Upanishads especially, because they use words that are multivalent, the words can have different meanings in different contexts. That's why they are even more difficult to understand than the other books in the Vedic library. So the Upanishads are for the Jnanis, and this is the kind of speculation that Jnanis like to do. Why is this statement and this statement contradictory over here? Why is this and this over here like this? And they'll try to figure out and come up with their own explanations. But actually, if you want a real explanation, we have to come through Guru Sadhu Shastra. Because they are, the Guru Sadhu Shastra Parampara goes directly to Krishna. And it's not just historically going towards Krishna, it is also internally going towards Krishna, because the great acharyas are connected with Krishna in their heart. And that's how Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna gives them the intelligence to understand things in a proper way. So, now let us move to the mantra. Andham tamaha pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo yav vidyayamrataha. So, andham tamaha pravishanti, they will enter into the darkness of ignorance. Who? Ye avidyam upasate, those who worship avidya. And tato bhuya ivate tamo, that even tato bhuya, again, even more, ivate, even greater tamo, greater darkness will be for those who, yau vidyayam rataha. So, here vidyayam rataha means those who are absorbed in knowledge, but actually this knowledge is not spiritual knowledge, it is so-called knowledge. Those who are in so-called knowledge, they will enter into greater darkness. Let's look at this translation. So Prabhupada writes, those who engage in the culture of nascent activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. So let's look at the purport in terms of its flow. So Srila Prabhupada will explain first in the purport why is it said that Vidya is actually worse than Avidya. Normally we would say Vidya is better than Avidya, so he'll explain that in the first paragraph. Then second paragraph to fourth paragraph will explain what exactly is Avidya Upasati. How can one worship Avidya? What exactly does that mean? Then he will talk about Vidyayam Rataha. So those who are in so-called knowledge, what is the so-called knowledge? So halfway through the fourth paragraph he starts that. And then he divides this into three categories. The so-called Vidya can be godless modern education. Then there is Vedavadrataha. There are those who study the Vedas, but they think the Vedas are meant only to give us material knowledge. And they focus on that material knowledge coming from the Vedas without looking at its spiritual side. And Maya Aparita Jnana are those people who have knowledge, but Maya has stolen away their knowledge. These are the Mayavadis, those who claim to be God. So this Srila Prabhupada will elaborate later also about Mayavadis. But these are the three kinds of broad categories of people who have knowledge, but they attain actually a destination. Their knowledge does not give them an auspicious destination. So they are the godless materialists, or the irreligious materialists, the gross materialists, and they are the religious materialists. And then there are the monists. Monists are those who say everything is one. They are the Mayavadis. So let us look at these sections now. So why Vidya is worse than Avidya? So Srila Prabhupada writes, modern civilization has advanced considerably in the field of mass education. So where credit is due, we can give credit. Sometimes we say that Srila Prabhupada used to criticize scientists a lot. It is not that Srila Prabhupada was criticizing scientists. He says, yes, where scientists have done something good, we can give credit over there. But the point is, often they go beyond where credit is due and make unwarranted unscientific claims. He's saying, yes, as compared to the past, we can say that mass education is much more. Modern civilization has advanced considerably in the field of mass education. But the result is that people are more unhappy than ever before because of the stress placed on material advancement to the exclusion of the most important part of life, the spiritual aspect. People are more unhappy than ever before. Now, is this a claim that can be substantiated? Then we can say that happiness cannot be measured. That is true. But still, we do see that as compared to the past, stress, depression, addiction, suicide, all these are at proportions which were never there in the past. Now, stress is such a disastrous modern disease which is not there in the past. So now in this century, the WHO has declared that mental diseases, mental health will be the greatest challenge. So this is a serious problem. So people are not happy. So this is, although we may say we cannot quantify happiness, but if you look at the statistics of overall well-being of people, as compared to even a few decades ago, what to speak of centuries ago, stress, depression, suicide, addiction, these four have increased enormously. So therefore, it is undeniable that people are not happy. And they may be more comfortable, but they are comfortably miserable. People may be comfortable physically, but mentally they are suffering. Now, in the past, people may have been sweating because of having to work under the sun in the fields. But now people may have their plush AC offices, and inside the AC offices they sweat. Not because of cold, but because of stress, because of tension. So, as far as happiness is concerned, what Srila Prabhupada is saying is, you just have to look around. And there are many books which talk about statistically also how the proportion of stress, suicide, addictions, depression, all these are far, far more than before. Then what is the cause of this? Prabhupada explaining that the result is that people are more unhappy than ever before because of the stress placed on material advancement to the exclusion of the most important part of life, the spiritual aspect. So it's not that we are specifically against material progress. What we are against is the exclusion of the material aspect of life. When the material side is neglected and only spiritual side is focused, material side is highlighted excessively and the spiritual side is neglected, then that leads to serious imbalance. And people have lots of things, but they don't have happiness. As Martin Luther King said, we have guided missiles, but misguided men. Our technological power has outrun our spiritual power. The means have far run ahead, have exceeded the ends for which they are meant to be. So we have uncontrolled machines and we have controlled machines and uncontrolled minds. So this is the disastrous tragedy of our modern society. Now after this, Srila Prabhupada explains, avidyamupasate. What exactly is avidyamupasate? So, forgetfulness of the Ishavasya principle. The principle that the absolute truth, that the Supreme Lord is the owner of everything, is the controller of everything. The forgetfulness of Ishavasya principle is avidya. So, what is the practical implication of Ishavasya principle? That if God is the controller, then that means God is the owner, God is the controller. That means things are not meant for my enjoyment. Tena tyaktena bhunjita magrdha kasya siddhanam. Take only what is meant for you, not anything beyond that. But when I forget that God is a controller, then the idea begins that, okay, whatever I can grab and I get my hands on, I can enjoy. So, the immediate result of rejection of God is enjoyment. Enjoying mentality. In the Bhagavad Gita also, in the 16th chapter, when Krishna talks about this, asatyama patishtham te jagadahuranishwaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. So he says, in 16.8 in the Bhagavad Gita, that those who say anishwaram, they say no Ishwara, they immediately come to the conclusion, kimanyat kama haitukam, what other purpose of this world is there beyond kama, beyond sensual enjoyment? That is the purpose of life. That's how the degeneration of thoughts happens. Reject God and then gross sense gratification becomes the result. So, Srila Prabhupada writes that, how can one worship avidya? We don't have to make a deity of avidya and start doing arti and chappan bhog of avidya. So avidya means forgetfulness of God. And worship of avidya means when we forget God, we pursue sense gratification. Pursue sense gratification, and not only pursue sense gratification, but we make sense gratification itself as the ultimate reality of life. Now, there are some people, so this Prabhupada writes, this is profitless pursuit of sense gratification. Why profitless pursuit? Because actually, in sense gratification, the happiness is so little as compared to the effort. When we crave for sense pleasure, sometimes hours and hours and hours, people are dreaming, I'll do this, I'll enjoy. But the actual pleasure, the body's capacity is for a few minutes. After that, it's over. So it's profitless pursuit of sense gratification. But this pursuit of sense gratification is itself become like a religious activity for people. You know, today the kind of adulation that is offered to movie stars and other such pop icons is actually bordering on religious worship, if not exceeding it at times. When some movie star comes along, thousands of people are there cheering that person. And that person, when George Harrison was at his peak, you know, what happened was that he was in a hotel staying, and then there was in the washroom of the hotel, there was a towel, and he used that towel. And then the owner of that hotel took that towel and sold it in auction. And they made 16 parts of it, and people purchased each part of it at a huge price. So just as people take a DT, and the paraphernalia of the DT, even a small cloth from the DT is considered sacred. So here, people are considering the cloth that has been used once in a washroom by a music icon as almost sacred. So people go to the place where a film star was born, and they consider it to be sacred pilgrimage. And so in this way, basically, people make sense gratification into a secular god. And they start worshipping those who provide them sense gratification. But actually, they are temporary gods, because as long as the person is providing sense gratification, that person is the object of adulation. But as soon as the person becomes old, becomes disfigured, is no longer able to provide sense gratification, the person is tossed aside and some other person is brought over there. And then that person is put on the pedestal, temporarily worshipped. And then when that person no longer provides sense gratification, tuck, that person is tossed off the pedestal and somebody else is placed on the pedestal. So this is actually worship of avidya. So worship of avidya means the zealous, almost fanatical and irrational pursuit of sense gratification. That is what is seen in today's society. So just there's some people who say, why do you worship images of gods? You know, don't worship images of gods. Well, they don't worship images of gods, but then they put images of movie stars and sports stars all around. And people look at them as if they are taking some sacred darshan. So essentially, worship of avidya is what is happening in society today. So actually, whatever worship was meant to be directed towards God, now it is directed towards some other people. So this is how sense gratification is pursued by people. And this is called by the Ishopanishad as avidya mupasate. Because we have nothing against movie stars or sports stars per se. But the ignorance because of which they are put on a pedestal as if they are God, that is a tragic abuse, misuse, underuse of human intelligence. And what is the result of that? Annam tamaha pravishanti. People stay in the ignorance of material existence. Now, if we are attracted to certain people, we will try to become like them. If a film star has a particular kind of hairstyle, everybody wants to have that kind of hairstyle. And people keep imitating about it, people keep thinking about it. And if they're thinking of some other materialistic person, a movie star or sports star, when they die, then what will happen? Yam yam va pismaran bhavam, Krishna describes in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th verses, he describes how what we think of at the time of death will determine our next destination. And what we think of throughout our life will determine what we think of at the time of death. So if we are focusing on thinking of these avidya mupasate, this worship of movie stars, then the end result will be that we will think about those movie stars at the time of death, and then we will again continue on material existence. You know, depending on the kind of consciousness that we have cultivated, depending on the kind of desires that we have, which will largely be materialistic, sensual, immoral, because that's the kind of activity that are glorified by these movie stars many times. So this is avidya mupasate. Now, here andha refers to the darkness of material existence. The spiritual world is tamasoma jyotirgama. It is full of light, and the Upanishads urge us to go from this darkness towards the light. But here people stay in the darkness of material existence. They don't come out. Now let us look at tato bhuya ivate tamo ya uvidya yamrataha. That those who are in so-called knowledge, they go into still greater darkness. Let's see what this refers to. So modern godless education is what is being talked about. Now we will have to recognize this. What is so bad about modern education? That you can understand in 3 degrees. To be in ignorance is bad. So if I don't know, if I'm going along, if I'm driving a street and I don't know the traffic laws, it's bad. It's my moral responsibility, legal responsibility, to know the traffic laws if I'm driving on the street. If I don't know it, that's bad. But to be in ignorance and to claim to be in knowledge is worse. That means I have no knowledge, but I think that I know, and I claim to others I know. Suppose I don't know the way, I don't know the way along the road, and still I say, come, I'll tell you, this is the way, come along this way. Now that is worse. If I don't know the way, that's bad. If I don't know the way and somebody asks me and tell I know the way, come with me, I'm misleading the person. I'm myself misled, I'm misleading others. So that is the non-theistic scientist. That means the scientists who talk about this material world and completely divorce God from it. They say God doesn't matter at all. So actually the whole of creation ultimately leads us towards God. How? Because when we look at the world, we see such artistry, such intricacy, such harmony in this world that it cannot have come by chance. There may be some mechanism by which it may have happened, but ultimately that mechanism itself is not automatic or by chance. There is some designer behind it. So to just try to divorce God from this world and to just focus on studying the world alone, that and say that if we just study this world, we try to improve this world and we'll become happy. There's no need to bring God in. So this is like saying that I don't know the way, but I'll show you the way. Because it's, without God, when we try to enjoy the kingdom of God, it doesn't work. It doesn't work because this world is ultimately meant for the service of God. So worse than this is to be in ignorance and to claim to be in knowledge and to condemn real knowledge as ignorance. What does this mean? That this is a third level. So for example, say if I am here right now and going this way is the right way and I don't know that, but I start going this way and somebody is going that way. I tell, hey, that way, that's nonsense. Don't go there. Come this way. So what is happening? Not only am I going on the wrong way, not only am I claiming that I am on the right way, but worse still, somebody is in the right way. I am saying that that person is wrong on the wrong way and I am condemning that person and trying to drag him on the wrong way. So this is the worst. So how did this work out? And in today's society, people who live with faith in God, often there are people who say we often hear about right-wing religionists, right-wing Muslims, right-wing Christians, right-wing Hindus, but there are actually right-wing atheists also. Right-wing atheists are extremely fanatical people who believe that atheism is the solution to the problems of the world because religion is the cause of all problems. Such people, they condemn God at every opportunity and they condemn religion at every opportunity and they try to drag people away from religion towards atheism. Such people are they condemn real knowledge as ignorance. So they may study, for example, science also, but their study of science leads them not towards God but away from God. And they claim that actually science takes people away from God. So this is the worst of all. This is the greatest ignorance. So this is this kind of education, which is godless education, it keeps people in great ignorance and it keeps them away from God. And that is the misfortune of today's educational advancement. And we will see this. The result of this is people's moral values have slid down terribly. Although people may have a lot of technological power, they have very little moral power. They have very little willpower. So, this is godless education. And essentially, if we look at today's technology, what is it being used for in many ways? The technology in and of itself is not bad, but what is it today being used for? Actually, it is basically used to promote sense gratification in many ways. So for example, television is there. So now television, there can be good things shown on television. Through internet one can go to good sites and learn useful information, even useful spiritual knowledge one can get. But how many people are actually doing that? Very few. So most of the technological advancement is being used by people to fuel their sense gratificatory desires and to make them more and more degraded. So because of this, when people are provided with more and more knowledge, and the result of knowledge is technology, technological gadgetry with sense gratification coming through it, then they become more and more degraded. So this is the misfortune, that even children today get unfiltered access many times to obscene content, to content on the internet that can be very psychologically damaging for them. So they get exposed to such content, then it is very damaging. And what to speak of, there are people who even become addicted when they are older people. Youth especially can become addicted to things like pornography. So now there is technology, and there is advanced technology in computers and internet. But what is that being used for? That is not being used for anything very laudable. So this happens because the whole underlying ethos of today's society is avidyam upasate, that sense gratification considered to be the goal of life, and all of material knowledge and material technology, it is considered this is all meant to promote sense gratification. So, you know, I did my electronics and telecommunication engineering, and I was fascinated to understand how the whole field of electronics works. But when I came to the fourth year, and then I studied, one of the main applications of electronic telecommunication was television and entertainment. So then I was quite disappointed. I said that, you know, I studied 4 years of my life using all my hard work, and at the end, what am I doing with this? Do I really want to just spend it all to entertain people? You know, to make a better idiot box for people? Technology, again, if it is not integrated into a worldview that promotes holistic living, that gives adequate space for spiritual life, then technology can suck a person in, just like vacuum cleaner sucks in air. So the titillation that is offered through technology, that can just suck in a person so much, that person has no time, no mental freedom of thought, and no practically capacity left to think of anything else. There are many people who are so titillated by the multiple variety of sense gratification that are offered, that unless something is offered in a hyper-stimulated way to them, they just can't respond to it. So this is the result of vidyayamrataha. Now this is godless education. Now if you go beyond that, there is the vedavadarataha. So vedavadarataha, Srila Prabhupada talks about in three paragraphs. So they are the karmakandis. So the Vedas talk about many things. The Vedas talk about material sense gratification for those who want material sense gratification. But that is only the beginning topic. And after that, they take people to higher spiritual knowledge. So Karmakanda is the beginning of Vedic spiritual knowledge, Vedic knowledge. But there are some people who mistake the side issue in the Vedas as their ultimate purpose. That means, they say that actually, what are the Vedas teaching? This only. Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadanti avipaschita veda vadrataha partha na anyan asti iti vadinaha. So, this word veda vadrataha comes from 2.42 in the Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada uses in his purport to talk about materialists. So, first we talked about godless materialists, completely atheistic materialists or non-religious materialists. Now we are talking about religious materialists, those who believe in religion, those who even believe in God also. But they think that the main purpose of God's existence is to provide a sense gratification. And this is the level at which most religions are today. Whether it is Hinduism or Islam or Christianity, people think the purpose of dharma is to get artha and kama. That is one purpose, but that is not the highest purpose. And those who think that this is not just the highest purpose, this is the only purpose of religion. The only purpose of religion is dharma is to give artha and kama. So that is a serious mistake. So people who think like this, they mistake side issue in the Vedas as the ultimate purpose. These people actually reduce religion to just another form of materialism. For them, religion is just materialism with a good face on it, with a pious face on it. That's all. So they don't have any conception of anything beyond the material. And because of not having any conception of anything beyond the material, they cannot achieve anything beyond the material. So Krishna talks about their mentality first in 2.42-43. And he says, they are avipaschitaha, they are non-discriminating. They do not understand the difference between matter and spirit. And in 9.20 and 21, Krishna says that such people, Detetam bhuktva svargalokam vishalam kshine punne martilokam vishanti, that even if such people achieve some result by their religious materialism, even if they achieve some enjoyment, that enjoyment is temporary. It will be lost. So even if they attain heavenly planets, from the heavenly planets they will have to fall back. Even if in this world they attain some prosperity, that prosperity is not eternal, because nothing in the world is eternal. that will also end. So, by their avapaschitaha, the human form can be used to attain something eternal. But when they use it to attain something temporary, in the name of religion, then they are depriving themselves of the gift of religion. And that's how they are also unfortunate. So, now, those who mistake Saideshwin Vedas as their ultimate purpose, either there can be many religions also. And today we have pious materialists who actually just give nominal lip service to the Vedas, but do all sorts of things themselves. For example, we have in many places in India, Chennai and other places, say Visa Ganesh temple. What is this Visa Ganesh temple? People think that the goal of life is to go to America. Indians think like that. And for that purpose, they say that, oh Lord Ganesh, you are the remover of obstacles. The biggest obstacle for me to go to America is the visa department. That is not giving me visa. So I'll do worship to you and you please arrange to give me a visa. And long queue there, people are looking for visa. Similarly, there may be this worldly enjoyment is otherworldly enjoyment. There are many in Islam, there are many jihadis who are ready to kill other people, innocent people, become suicide bombers. Why? Because according to one twisted interpretation of the Quran, they have been told that those who die in jihad, they will be awarded with 71 virgins in Jannat for all of eternity. So, actually speaking, this is a gross misinterpretation of whatever is there in the Quran. But the more important point is, this is what is alluring people to give up their life. They think that in this life I am so poor that I can't get even one woman to enjoy. 71 virgins, nothing like it. So that's how they are not attracted to God, they are attracted to the virgins. So this is religious materialism, and this is distorted religious materialism also. But it is there in all religions. Karmakanda is a feature of religion that is there in all religions, where people use religion to get better material enjoyment. Now what happens because of this? Prabhupada writes, Medabhadrataha, they misguide people, they misinterpret the Vedas, and that's why Tato Bhuya Ivate Tamo. So they go into darker ignorance. In what sense? They also stay in material existence, because that's what they want to do. But because they are misguiding people, that's why it is said that they are going to go into darker ignorance, misinterpret the Vedas. So somebody doesn't know, that's bad. But somebody pretends to know, that's even worse. So such people, because they say that this is the conclusion of the Vedas, somebody says that, we want to study the Vedas, we want to know who is God. Forget about who is God. The Vedas have so much knowledge. How you can get better enjoyment, how you can do material things better. Just focus on that. So there are many people who want to divorce the material knowledge in the Vedas from the spiritual knowledge. They say that Indian culture has got so much advanced material knowledge. But because it has become mixed up with the spiritual knowledge, so we are rejecting that also. We should at least value the material knowledge and don't bother about the spiritual knowledge. In one sense, even if we recognize the value of the material knowledge that is given in the Vedas, that is valuable. But if we think that is all that the Vedas are supposed to give us, and the spiritual knowledge is irrelevant, then we are depriving ourselves and depriving others of the essential gift of the Vedas. So this is Vedavadarataha Partha. These are people who are, Krishna is telling in the Bhagavad Gita that these are people, they are just absorbed in the rituals of the Vedas meant for material enjoyment. So Rataha is the common word between this verse from the Bhagavad Gita 2.42 and Mantra 9 of the Isha Upanishad. Vidyayam Rataha. That is there. So now, after describing these Karmakandis, now the classic example of these Karmakandis are in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 23, the Yagyik Brahmanas. And they were so busy doing the rituals that even when Krishna came, they did not pay any attention to Krishna. They just kept doing the rituals again. And they not only neglected Krishna, they rejected Krishna's request for help when he sent it through the Gopas. So his wives, the wives of this Brahmana, they didn't do that. They went immediately. So they were not Vedvadrata, their husbands were. Now, worse than that are the Mayaya Aparita Jnanaha. So, who are the Mayaya Aparita Jnana? This word, Prabhupada, is using again purport, and this comes from 7.15 in the Bhagavad Gita. In 7.15, there is the verse which talks about four categories of people who do not surrender to Krishna. Namam duskriti na moodha prapadyante na radhama mayaya aparita jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. So among the four categories of people, there are moodhas, people who are like donkeys, naradhama, lowest among human beings, mayaya aparita jnana, whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion, and asuram bhavam ashritaha, those who are outright demoniac. So among these, the maya aparita jnana are singled out by Srila Prabhupada to explain in this purport, because the maya aparita jnana, they have knowledge. And this verse is talking about vidyayam rataha. These people have knowledge, but that knowledge takes them further deeper into darkness. So now the maya aparita jnana are basically those here in this context Srila Prabhupada is using, tato bhuya ivate tamo, those who go into deeper darkness. He's talking about impersonalists, especially he's talking about Mayavadis. So let us first look at the difference between Brahmavad and Mayavad. So Vad means argument, not just one argument, but it often refers to school of thought that is meant to make a proposition, advance an argument, establish a system of thought. So Brahmavad is the idea that Brahma is the ultimate truth. So generally the Brahmavadis, they focus on Brahman and they don't know about Bhagavan, or somehow they are not attracted to Bhagavan. This is what happened to the Kumaras and to Shukdev Goswami before they were able to contact the Lord through the devotees. So Brahmavadis do not offend the Lord. They do not know about the Lord. They are not attracted to the Lord. But if they are fortunate enough to meet with devotees who are also advanced and attracted to the Lord, then they can become attracted. So these are talked about by Krishna in 12.4 and 5 in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says that such people, their spiritual advancement is very difficult. Klesho adhiktarastesham avyakta asakta chetasam. Krishna says that klesho adhiktarastesham, that for such people the klesha is immensely high. Why? Both in the process and in the destination. For the mind to become detached from everything, and you just try to think of something impersonal, is very difficult. And because there is no higher taste, there is no object of thought to contemplate on and relish. Therefore, Krishna says this progress is difficult. But he says, over a period of time, they will attain. But then Krishna talks about Mayavadis as a separate category in 9.11.12. So who are the Mayavadis? So their vada is that Maya is the ultimate reality. That actually, there is nothing but Maya, in the sense that even the Lord's form is Maya, even the Lord's pastimes are Maya. So this world is Maya, and even the Lord's pastimes are Maya. They imagine Bhagavan to be a temporary manifestation of Brahman. They say actually the formless Brahman is the ultimate reality, and from that formless Brahman, sometimes the formless Brahman takes a form, and that form is Bhagavan. So because they imagine Brahman, Bhagavan to be temporary, they imagine that we have to go beyond Bhagavan also. And Krishna strongly condemns this. Avajananti ma moodha manushim tanum ashritam. Those who think that I have taken a temporary human form, they are avajananti. They do not know my param bhava jananti. They do not know my transcendental nature. And then after that, in the next verse, Krishna says that how such people are completely frustrated. Moghasha, mogha karmano, mogha jnana vichetasaha. This is mogha. Mogha means waste. So their knowledge, their desires for liberation, their fruitive activities, everything becomes mogha. Because they defy Krishna. They offend Krishna's form. Now, some people say, what is so wrong with the Mayavadis? They have their philosophy, we have our philosophy. Why did Srila Prabhupada have to criticize Mayavadis so strongly? Can't we just tolerate? Yes, this idea seems to be good, but actually there is a fundamental misunderstanding that is happening about the nature of Mayavad. Mayavad is not just another philosophy.
It is another philosophy in the sense that
it is one among many philosophies, but the problem is it is giving a totally disastrous misunderstanding of the Vedic literature. So let's see how. You know, among all the great religious traditions of the world, the only place where the personal activities of the Lord are delineated are the Vedic literature. Apart from the Vedic literature, in the other literature, the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, there is very little positive description about God, what He looks like, what He does in His abode, what are His likes and dislikes, at a personal level. That is not talked about at all. So, God's personal descent. So many times the Lord descends and performs pastimes. So God's personal descent is the unique bone of the Vedic literature. It is a unique bone, and what has happened to it? It is made into a unique bane by imposters. How is that? We'll understand this. Bane is like a curse. Boon is a blessing. So, how is the boon made into a bane by imposters, by the Mayavadis? Let's see. Materialism and monism are the two schools of thought which are classified by Srila Prabhupada in this Vidyayam Rataha, those so-called knowledge. And both have misconceptions. So imagine that if I was given a 100 rupee note or a 500 rupee note, and then I looked at it, I thought it was authentic. When I go to some bank or some shop and they tell, you got this note? This note doesn't work. Why have you brought this note? It's a counterfeit note. So actually, to mistake a counterfeit note to be real is foolish. It is unintelligent. So that is what materialism does. Materialism mistakes the counterfeit note to be real. Materialism mistakes the counterfeit note to be real. It tells us that this enjoyment. Now there are the movie stars who are enjoying. You can also have your romance. You can also have a very happy life here. Just make all arrangements possible and be happy. It mistakes the counterfeit note to be real. What is the idea? Temporary material activities are the essence of life. Now, if we say temporary material activities are the essence of life, then the result of that is that people forget about everything spiritual. Either they don't believe in it or they don't consider it to be important. But monists, they have a further, more complex misunderstanding. So, if I am given a false note and I mistake it to be real, that's bad enough. But if I am given a real note, I say, hey, this note is bogus. No, it's real. No, it's bogus. So, to mistake the real note to be counterfeit is even worse. So, because I had experience of some bad notes, so I'm very skeptical about the notes. But when I get a real note, to reject that note is worse. So what happens to the Mayavadis? They have seen all activities in the world as leading to bondage, as leading to the karma bandhana. So then they think that when they see the Lord's pastimes, they think these are also mundane. And these also have to be rejected. These also one has to go beyond them. And when one thinks like this, that one cheats oneself of the greatest gift of the Vedic literature. That is the personal revelation of God by which we can become so wonderfully attracted to Him. So to consider the Lord's activities to be Maya or a product of Maya is a disastrous blunder. So they say that actually we have to go beyond even the Lord's forms. For example, there was a famous Mayavadi or infamous Mayavadi, whichever you want to look at it. That person said, you know, why do you think that God would have a black complexion? So I write many articles and books. So I write articles in various newspapers. So the Times of India is the number one paper of India. So I was writing in the spiritual column. So one time the editor of Times of India wrote to me and said, can you write an article about why Krishna is black? Don't tell the usual story stuff. Tell something new. So then I had a strange inquiry. Then I investigated. What is the reason for this inquiry, this request? And then I found that there are different people who advance their own theories about why Krishna is black, and all those theories are quite intellectually titillating if they are coming from non-devotees, because now, devotees get devotional rasa. But when there are not people who are not devotees, then there is no devotional rasa, then they need some taste, so they get intellectual tickling. So there was this one famous Mayavadi who said that, just think, why would anyone ascribe a black form to God? Black is not considered beautiful, and God is supposed to be beautiful. So actually there's a deep reason for this. Now black indicates darkness, and white is light. So by ascribing a black form to God, the saints are telling us that we have to go beyond this black form to the white formless light that is Brahman. So the form is only temporary, the formless light is eternal. So go beyond the black form to the white light. Now most people, wow, I never thought of that. Is that so? People will get impressed by this. But actually, this is sheer nonsense. It's not told in the scriptures anywhere, nor is it told by the acharyas. So actually speaking, Krishna has a dark complexion, and that is his personal choice. But even through his dark complexion, he illustrates how even a dark complexion can also be beautiful. In fact, can be supremely beautiful. So Krishna is Shyama, but he's not just Shyama, he's Shyama Sundara. He's supremely beautiful as Shyama. So people may think a fair complexion to be beautiful and a dark complexion to not be beautiful. But Krishna shows that his form doesn't limit itself to our normal conventions of beauty or lack of beauty. Krishna can be dark and still he can be beautiful. And not just beautiful, but supremely beautiful. So people come up with these kind of ideas and they say we have to go beyond Krishna to something else. So Krishna's pastimes, which are meant to be the shelter of the soul, by thinking about pastimes, we can become purified, we can become elevated and eventually liberated. But those pastimes are rejected as illusory, as false. That is the great danger of Mayavad. So they mistake the real coin to be counterfeit. The real pastimes, they say, they are temporary. The true form of Krishna, which is the shelter of the conditioned souls hankering for beauty, though that form is rejected by the Mayavadis as false. Now, what happens is, once there is no person God to worship, God is just a formless light, and that formless light can take many forms, and it has taken many forms at different times. So what happens is, I also become a form temporarily taken by that formless light. So if I am also the form taken by the formless light, and if I can do some word jugglery, then I also become worshipable. People will come and worship me. And in this way, when people start coming and worshipping me, I get lost. I get deluded. I get overwhelmed by ignorance further. So many Mayavadis, they claim to be God. They say ultimately God has no form. And all the devatas that are there, which are worshipped in the literature, they are all temporary forms of their absolute truth. So you can worship those forms. Or, you know, you don't know those devatas so well. You know me well. I am also Brahman realized. So you worship me only. And people start worshipping their gurus as if it's God, as if they are God. So in this way, Mayavad not only discourages people in the worship of the Supreme Lord, but also provides them a false God to worship. And that's how it can be very detrimental to the spiritual health of people. So now, as devotees, we have to remember that Krishna's form is eternal. And Krishna's pastimes are also eternal. They are the shelter for us. But the more we become absorbed in those pastimes, the more we become liberated from material existence. So this is the vision that we need to have when we hear Krishna's pastime. That's why the Bhagavad Gita uses in 4.9 the word tattvataha. We have to know in truth. We just know superficially for the entertainment value, or even superficially at an intellectual level, then we will not be able to mine the gift of the Lord's revelation that has been given in the Vedic literature to its full potential. We'll be only able to taste it a little bit. If you want to mine it fully, then we have to get rid of the Mayavad conception. To understand that Krishna's form is real, Krishna's activities are real, and Krishna is my Lord. I'm eternally meant to serve and love Him. Whatever I am doing right now,
it is simply meant to
contribute to his service in the future. So in this way, by recognizing Mayavad for what it is, by recognizing how it is detrimental and dangerous, we can save ourselves from it. We'll look at Mayavad more in the future. So Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport that now if the Mayavadis are asked, how can they say, I am God, you are God, everyone is God. He says, how can God come under illusion? So Prabhupada writes quite sarcastically over here that the last paragraph, they say that these self-made gods cannot answer all these questions very clearly. What are all these questions? How can God come under illusion? They are simply satisfied to have become gods themselves. They say, don't ask questions. I am God. Be happy. Worship me. Serve me. So they don't want to have questions asked. They can't give answers. They are simply satisfied to have become God themselves. So the Prabhupada also writes many good sentences in the purport, solid sentences. He refers to how the Vedic literature are meant to raise the forgetful soul. And people say, forget this, then they suffer in material existence. So these are Veda Vadrataha, and they enter deeper into darkness. Not necessarily because they do greater sinful karma, but simply because they shut themselves off, thinking that they already know, and that therefore they don't need to know anything. That's why they don't come to know anything more. And that's how their knowledge keeps them in ignorance. Their knowledge keeps them pursuing sense gratification. Knowledge makes them think they are still knowledgeable. And that doesn't allow them to pursue alternate lifestyles that can elevate them to goodness. So to summarize, in this section, the Lord is talking about, Ishopishita is talking about Vidya and Avidya. So we discussed how Vidya and Avidya have different meanings in different contexts. In this verse, we discussed about how Vidya Yamrata is worship of ignorance. That means, since ignorance leads to sense gratification, so those people and things that provide a sense gratification, people get caught in that. And when they get caught in that, they suffer. So that is Vidyayamrata, get caught in sense gratification. And there is knowledge that further promotes sense gratification. There are three categories: the godless modern education, the religious materialism of the Vedas, and the impersonalism, especially Mayavad. So now Mayavad in one sense is spiritual because the Mayavadis identify themselves with the Brahman. But they have to act on the material level, and when they have to act on the material level, they interact with the material energy, and that can cause suffering to them also. So by understanding these categories, we understand why those who are irresponsible, those who have been given intelligence but don't use their intelligence, they abuse it, and that's why they suffer, and others also suffer because of that. They will enter into greater darkness. So we'll continue the next verse talking about how Vidya and Avidya lead to two different results. Thank you very much. Shri Ishopanishad ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Dai Gaura Premani, Shri Hari Bol. Thank you.